Hello, Joe Bleifuss. Welcome to KABU here in Portland, Oregon.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Joe Bleifuss is the editor and publisher of the Left Monthly Journal in these times, where he has worked his way up since 1986. Over his 34 years in these times, has published thousands of pieces suggesting ways to make this a more equal, just, democratic country. Indeed, if put in a package and implemented in this country, it would be a model for building that better, necessary, possible, democratic, sustainable country we could and need to become. But today the country is in deep, deep trouble. As Biden takes office, the situation and its politics couldn't be more challenging. There's a COVID epidemic, 400,000 people already dead, our fast declining economy, a vast increase in possible in the already millions of homeless is now looming. On top of that, climate change, it's rapidly intensifying. It has to be stopped, say the climate scientists, within the next 10 years. Our criminal justice system, it's deeply unjust, especially to people of color. And on top of all that, Trump generated a growth, radicalization, and organization of the extreme right with white supremacist nationalist leadership that sees the pandemic and climate change as hoaxes. And they're attempting to infiltrate the police and military on the way to their goal of taking over this country. And they learned a lot in their failed and sometimes comic attack on the Capitol building. So Joe Bleifuss, in response to those challenges, our new president could do a lot through executive orders and by changing energy agency policy. Indeed, he could do a lot about immigration and climate change just by reversing Trump's executive orders. But also much must be done through Congress passing laws, like, in fact, the $1.9 trillion COVID relief package that would provide monies to pay the rent and buy food for millions of people who are now unemployed and getting destituted. And it also gives funds to the states for administering vaccine shots and supporting state services. State revenues are way down. But the Congress is quite conservative. Most of the Democratic Party members they're men and women who became accustomed to serving the corporations and the rich, and they even came to believe that it will all trickle down. Indeed, Biden himself has a terrible record, support for the Iraq War, support for increases in the military budget, support for long mandatory criminal punishments for relatively minor crimes, also for trade deals, for welfare reform, and on, and he doesn't apologize. In his campaign, he opposed Medicare for All and opposed the Green New Deal. Well, it must be said for Biden that he did promise some fundamental changes in climate change policy and in transforming our medical system. The long and short of it is that Biden and the Congress have to be pushed hard to do anything meaningful. And Joe Bleifuss, my guest today, has written on just that. So, Joe Bleifuss, tell us about the Congress. Tell us about their political center of gravity and how they have to be pushed. But not all Congress people are conservative. There's a progressive caucus, as you point out in the January in these times. It could gain leverage, could exercise a great deal of power. Tell us how they could do it.
I think that progressives often feel that nothing's changed, that the Democratic Party has ossified and that things haven't progressed. But I think if you take like a 30-year look, back in 1991, Bernie Sanders and four other members of Congress established a Congressional Progressive Caucus. Today, in 2021, it's the largest caucus within the Democratic Party in Congress. And within that group are some very committed progressives. The caucus has reorganized itself. It's going to start requiring new things of its member, and it's going to become a much more potent force, which I think is great for progressive legislation because it'll provide a counterbalance to, say, the sort of more moderate Republicans that will work with Biden, and he will now receive pressure from this sort of congressional, well-organized progressive group in Congress. At the same time, of course, social movements will be on the streets and campaigning, going door to door, putting pressure on their elected officials and the administration to move faster and more bravely and more directly to address the many needs of this country.
Yeah, you just pointed out it would provide a counterweight to the Republicans and some of the conservative Democrats that Biden is certain to depend on. My sense is, how large is the Progressive Caucus?
It's about 100, and there are various levels of commitment. But clearly, if a large group of Democratic congressmen decided they weren't going to support a bill because it was too conservative, they would be joined by conservative Republicans who won't support it because it's a Democratic initiative. And so they have real influence to halt legislation or anything that's going on that they disagree strongly with. Of course, there's going to be compromise, and I'm sure that the Progressive Caucus will be supporting things that they don't believe are ideal, but which are better than the alternative.
Yeah, let's go into that a little bit more. It seems to me that if the Biden medical bill does not include, let's say, medical proposals and doesn't include the promise and that, let's say, the Department of HEW, the promise would be to the Progressive Caucus that the Department of HEW would make waivers available to the states to set up Medicare for All programs. Vermont did try it. They needed more money, said one apologist. Vermont did get the waivers, but they never did set up the program. Their reason was they couldn't get enough money. It was a very big disappointment. There would also have to be some money available for the planning. But it seems to me even if Biden didn't try go to Medicare for All, which is very unlikely, the Progressive Caucus could demand that waiver so some states could, in fact, and there are several states where there's sentiment in the legislatures to do it. Is that the kind of action
that's one thing that the Progressive Caucus could do. I mean, another thing would just simply have a public option. And that the thinking goes that because the public option would be much more efficient and cost-effective, that would put pressure on the industry itself and provide sort of a solid step toward Medicare for All.
Yeah, either of those are very attractive, it seems to me, and are the kind of reforms that really have meaning and that could lead to something far more sweeping.
There are also reforms that are very popular with people, and I think it's important for the Democratic Congress and Biden to, you know, demonstrate right off the bat that they are concerned with the tragedy that so many Americans are living currently.
Yeah, let's talk about one other area of climate change. Climate science has warned us that unless we take action within the next 10 years, really sweeping action, dramatic action, way beyond the Paris Agreement, we could be facing an irreversible global roasting that would, at minimum, lead to the death of most human beings. And Biden seems to realize the gravity of the situation, although he campaigned saying he didn't agree with the Green New Deal. That may be just a campaign. He couldn't appear too, I think they all thought they couldn't appear too radical, and maybe they were right. A lot of the left doesn't think so. But anyway, what they could do, it seems to me, in terms of climate change, that would be very, very significant, is to fund in any appropriation bill for infrastructure, even COVID relief, put a few $20 billion, whatever it is, we're creating some model zero carbon cities with community energy and a few larger utility scale plants in adjacent areas, no vast grid where communities in fact could control their own energy. That appropriation and plan could be very important because it would show the rest of America what could be done, which is very important if we're ever going to decide to really mobilize. I have the sense that that's one of the key things that a Progressive Caucus could go for. What's your sense of how climate change is going to play out?
Well, I think part of the advantage that the climate change movement has going for it is that there are economic incentives, there are economic reasons to switch from oil to solar or wind or hydropower. And those reasons are driving the development of alternative energy resources. And so it's very important that what Congress can do, it can get rid of the sort of structural advantages that it gives the petroleum industry and all of its adjunct parts, and sort of even the playing field, because without state support, the oil industry would be not nearly as profitable as it is now, and it's not profitable now because the price of oil is so low. So I think that there's sort of market forces that could be employed very effectively to make sort of a green energy, which is job creating, much more efficient and affordable.
Yeah, by just reducing all those subsidies that they get. This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour, talking to Joel Bleifuss, the editor, publisher of the Left Monthly magazine, In These Times. We've been discussing how both Biden and the Congress are both conservative, have very conservative records and indeed worldviews, but they have a Trojan horse in their midst, the Congressional Progressive Caucuses of close to 100 members. Some are more committed than others. Still, it's a large caucus. It could win some very important programs. And it seems to me that's more possible because Biden and the Congress people have just experienced what I see as a come-to-Jesus moment when they were huddling together in the sub-basements of the Capitol building with armed soldiers, automatic assault rifles at the door protecting them as the Trump radicalized mobs ransacked through the building, some looking for Congress people to, who knows what to do, what they would do when they, if they had found them. My sense is that these Congress people suddenly came to realize the great danger of Trump and the right, and that, in fact, that so many U.S. North Americans are furiously angry. They're led by white supremacists. They could well take over this country, even win the next election. In fact, that's likely unless Biden and the Congress take major steps to stop the decline in living conditions and life security and dignity for the bottom 70% of the people. Just saying no to anything that would really aid working people while saying yes to corporate tax breaks, and that's no longer going to get them elected. So, Joel Bleifuss, am I right? You think that there's a fear going through them, and that would lead to them actually supporting progressive policies?
I guess I'm not so optimistic. I think that, of course, the invasion or the insurrection of the Capitol shook a number of people, and I think that there will be no sort of more public scrutiny of the sort of rise of white supremacists. But I don't see any change really coming from the Republican Party, and other than maybe for a few senators who are up for re-election in 2022, because they've sort of benefited by this voter suppression, this sort of tacit white supremacy through their Southern strategy, and now the Republican Party is reaping the results of their policy, and the party is splintering between those who are sort of in touch with reality and conservative, and those who are totally irrational and followers of Trump. So I think there is a fear that Trump could win, their Trump folks could win again, but I'm hopeful that the Republican Party is so divided that that's not going to be possible.
Yeah, well, that's the optimistic view, I think.
I always think the glass is half full.
Yeah, it's always half full. I agree. It's a half-empty part that bothers me. Anyway, you know it's a great Gramsci line, which he didn't speak. It's optimism of the will and the intellect. Of course, pessimism of the intellect, too.
The mind. Right.
Anyway, so Bleifuss.
I got a great quote for you. We have a story that we're publishing by the head of Wisconsin Citizen Action. It's sort of a strategy thing, and he writes how A. Philip Randolph asked FDR, who was a civil rights leader, asked FDR what he could do to intervene against soul-crushing racial oppression. And FDR told Randolph, "I agree with everything you said, but I would ask one thing of you, Mr. Randolph, and that's to go out and make me do it," end quote. And so I think that's a really important thing to understand about politicians, is that they respond to pressure, and they aren't going to do anything that they're not pressured to do if it also will cost them something. And so I think progressives have to be a lot more sort of nuanced and sophisticated about understanding how politicians work and understanding that they rely on direct pressure from people, and that if they don't act the way you want them to, it's because they haven't been pressured to do so, not necessarily because they won't.
You just introduced the last issue that I was hoping to talk about. It's left movements that will carry the day if they're large enough and disciplined enough and militant enough, as was the Great March of Washington in 1963. It scared the hell out of the assembled, mostly older white conservative people who serve. I'm hoping that the left movements, I have the vision that over the next month our movements, I have the hope that over the next months our movements apply maximum pressure on those elected officials. And hopefully when the pandemic is stopped, maybe in midsummer, late summer, our pent-up demand will express itself in great rallies and marches across the country and not accept no from our elected leaders to do something. The people now have absorbed the lessons of the great George Floyd eruptions. When you're in the streets and you have a righteous cause, the politicians are forced to respond, although you have to, of course, keep up the pressure. Bill Blankfuss, what do you see as the possibilities for that and the necessity and possibilities of left movements providing that maximum pressure and really erupting in mobilizations?
I think the possibilities for progressives to come together both on the outside and on the inside of, you know, on the outside of power and on the inside of power, meaning Congress, has never been higher. And that's what's often referred to as an inside-outside strategy. You have folks on the inside who are pushing for institutional change through the legislative process, and you have people on the outside who are clamoring in the streets for change and demanding it of their communities and societies and elected leaders. And I think that we saw in the 2020 presidential election and that this huge mobilization to oust Trump from office shows the movement sort of combining both an inside and outside approach at the same time, and that they understand the power of the legislation and understand that, you know, real change can't happen without legislative change, but they, at the same time, they understand that the legislature itself can't change unless there's pressure from the outside.
Joe Blankfuss, thanks so much for talking to us today. Congratulations on In These Times. It's an important journal of the left.
I'd just like to say that In These Times, all of our content is put on the web for free. We have no paywalls. We're a public service, a reader-supported magazine. Check us out online, inthesetimes.com.
Thanks a lot for talking to us.
Thank you.
You too.